Hello, 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 and welcome to the local edition on a Friday. I'm your host, Patricio Roballo. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're staying safe, enjoying the warm weather this week and the last days of a summer. In the second half of the show, we'll find out all about the Honeybee Festival that's happening this weekend in Narrowsburg. This year is happening at Fort Delaware. But first, it's Friday on the local edition, and every Friday we check in with the one and only Chris Rowley from the Shuwankuk Journal. So let us know what's happening in Ellenville in Ulster County. Chris, welcome back to the show. What do you have in store for us today?
Hey there. Hello, everybody. Yeah, okay. Oh, man. Rockin' Sockin' Hannibal Worthing Town Board Meeting with the inimitable Mark Blauer. Seems like the most amazing grant writer I've ever come across. Giving the town some news. Anyway, because Town of Worthing is in the midst of the process of repairing the damage and getting the Cohoxon sewer system, wastewater treatment system, into line with what the DEC has demanded. They failed the test in 2022, and in panic, I'm not in panic, but it was already in process. The town was working with Blauer to get some money to take care of the situation, which is essentially, in a nutshell, that the reed bed system that they had in there, which was nice and organic and all that, but it had failed. And the other side of that is that the reeds involved and invasive, they get loose, they put out a lot of seeds, and it's a global problem. Back in the 60s and 70s, these reeds were seen as a salvation thing. And then it was realized, whoa, what are we doing? We're setting off another Japanese knotweed. This is global. So that stopped. Instead, they're going out there for a sludge press, which is dewatering the product to make it much less expensive to ship it away. Because shipping it away water is just stupid. It's so expensive. It's ridiculous. Within a couple of years, you've got the savings once you have a sludge press for paying for the sludge press. However, so right now they're struggling with that. It's getting done. The sludge press is being built and will be just brought in and set up at the Cohoxon Wastewater Treatment Facility. However, Blauer is not on the war part, but he's not on the action part. He's pushing the municipalities he works with, and he works a lot. He's active in New Jersey. He's active in Pennsylvania. He's active here. He's pushing everyone to contemplate the fact that we don't have redundancy built in for these critical systems. If something really seriously goes wrong with the wastewater treatment plant in one of our municipalities, then what? Well, raw effluent is going to go out into a creek or a stream or whatever. The New York State DEC will be around in no time. Literally, they'll be there in days. You start doing that, and your first thing you get will be the violation notice. If you continue doing it, you'll get an action notice, which will say, get this fixed now. And there's no way, there's no appeal, you can't do anything about this. And if you don't comply, if you don't somehow find the money, get the bank loan, whatever it is, to spend millions to do it, the DEC can come back and they wield a hell of a hammer. They have the capacity to fine the municipality up to $37,500 a day. Now, okay, they won't necessarily do that. They might say, okay, look, get this done, or it's $10,000 a day or $20,000, but they have the capacity to go all that way. None of our municipalities can put up with the 4 or 5 months or whatever it would take to get a system up and running. If they're being fined that kind of money on a daily basis, they'll all be so deep in the red. The tax increase would be beyond the limit. It's a potential nightmare. But we're all vulnerable to this because we don't have these redundancies. And who thought of that? Who thought of having two systems so that you can switch one off and switch on another one in case you need it? We don't. However, take note, with other really crucial systems, like in private industry, whatever, right, they always have redundancies built in. If the production line is going to have to close down, they've got another one that they can set up. If you have a nuclear reactor, you have two nuclear reactors so that if you shut one down, you've got the other one to set up. There's these basics and the things. But we have, unfortunately, on the public side, not kept up. Therefore, like our rail lines, if we shut down the Port Jervis line, we shut it down. What? Then we have buses to take people to the next station or whatever. I understand that the costs are incredible and no one could afford to have doubled up. But that's where we're at now. We're not sleepy little hollows, extremely rural area that time is passing by. We're not. We are active, ongoing, growing counties, Sullivan County, Ulster County, Orange County's already grown. This is a vibrant part of the state, and it's close enough to New York City that it's now getting that New York City effect, and lots of people are moving here. So it's all changing up. It's all getting more, what's the right word, updated, modernized, intensified, and there's no room for errors, not with the DEC. And it's not as if the DEC are like cruel people who want to do this. They have reputations to protect. They have careers to protect. They are lifelong, dedicated civil servants. And if you go against them and you refuse to obey what they are telling you to do, it's going to come back on them. And before too long, there'll be either a New York Times special. There'll be reporters from that giant organ hunting around going, why didn't you do? Asking the difficult questions. And they don't want that. They're going to come down on whoever is leaking stuff into the creek, and they're going to come with potentially that huge hammer in their hand. So it's something that we all have to think about, and municipalities have to think about, and what can we do in terms of building in redundancies? How right. can we retrofit our wastewater treatment plants so that they can handle being shut down if we have to do the serious work that may be required? And man, I really know, folks, I really understand how expensive it all is, because I do Ellenville, I do all their board meetings, and I've seen Mike Ryman, the super guy who runs the Ellenville wastewater treatment plant, and he's got a plant that's been running 24/7, 364 for 12 years, and he never shuts down, never stops. But he's got all this equipment that is proprietary equipment. You can't go and buy one from, you can't go down to Home Depot and get a new one. It's not like that. You have to order it, and it's built to your specifications. So it's not even an instantaneous thing. And he's got all these things, these blowers, he's got all these other pieces of equipment, and they fail. And after 12 years of steady work, they start to show the signs of... So he's coming to the village board, and this is a village that is right hard up against the red. They are just staying solvent at this point. And he's got bills of 10, 20,000 every month. That, if you're trying to budget and you don't have much spare leeway, that's nightmarish. But it has to be done. And Ellenville had to do a whole new treatment plant 2010, whenever, because they were in violation and the DEC was hot on their trail. This is the sort of stuff that we blithely ignore, but we shouldn't. We have to, and the politicians, unfortunately for them, have to give us the bad news. And there's a very human inclination not to do that. It's like, I think here in America, you go home from school at the end of the term with a report card. Yeah. You might want to hide it and not let your mother and father see it. It's like that, only it's the politicians reporting to the voters and telling them we're potentially failing and it could cost us a fortune. So we got to do this. We may have to raise taxes. At the board meeting, had a long chat with Mark. He's dealing with this all over the place. And we have a lot of old and failing infrastructure, much of it related to wastewater treatment, all across the region. Every single town has got this kind of issue. I believe Fallsburg's got a water issue. I don't know what the issue might be at Monticello, but I bet you they got them too. It's common. And it's down to, we just have to pay more. You've got to dig in and come up with a scratch. That was that side of things, which was grim enough, but that's where it's at. But at least Mark has got them the money from, he got them an $800,000 grant, $1 million grant to pay most of the cost of this sludge press they're bringing in. But they still have to come up with more. And inflation hasn't been kind to any of this stuff either. But at least they've got that. But they've got to start thinking about redundancies and what they can do. Because the alternative is a nightmare. The ultimate nightmare, folks, is this. You don't pay, and the DEC wields the hammer. Maybe it's $10,000, $20,000 a day, whatever they decide. And they put you into a kind of an insolvent default position, at which point the Office of State Controller rolls in and takes over. And now you're not being run by the people you voted in. you're being run by a team of, I don't know, young people from Albany who arrive with their clipboard and their cell phones, and they are looking over the shoulders of everybody, and they take over. And do you really want to be run by that? No, but that's the potential that can happen. So that's why we just have to think about this in a more serious way. So that was all on the kind of the dark side of things.
Yeah, it's something that not a lot of people are liking sometimes when we have to raise taxes, but these taxes have to pay for infrastructure. And I said we have an aging water infrastructure system here, not only in Sullivan Catskills, but also in Northeast Pennsylvania. We also talk about Ulster County. Let's talk about another story here about housing. What can you tell us about housing?
On Wednesday was a little bright spark of hope. There was a long, quiet, almost, I just thought it was dead, project called the Worsing Estates, which is on the corner of land where 4455 and Route 209 meet. If you're driving up Route 209, you go past this in a second and you hardly even notice it. But there's regrown over this place. It was bulldozed like 15 years ago. They were going to put in a senior housing complex there. And the developers sank in a lot of money, maybe as much as $1 million, on infrastructure, pipes and, you know, so on in the ground in the event that they could build this thing. And there was going to be a pool and this, that, and the other, and probably courts for pickleball and tennis and all that. I can't remember. I don't think I dealt with it back then. However, it died because 2010, the economy tanked and there just wasn't going to be any demand for it. And then a few years later, because they hadn't done the re-up on reapprovals, those went away. And so it's been dead in abeyance. But now it's back. And Jeff Kaplan, former mayor of Ellenville and a well-known attorney in real estate stuff, he came in and he was championing this particular thing, bringing it back. However, this time, they wouldn't be coming back as a senior housing complex. It would be coming back as workforce housing, rental apartments, reasonable rents for young people starting out or old people downsizing or new people coming in to, amongst other things, satisfy the screaming demand from employers up and down the Rondout Valley, over into Sullivan, all over the county. People can't get staff because we have this problem that we're up and underbuilt at the same time. We've got lots of single family homes. We don't have apartments. And young people can't stay here if they don't have apartments so they can move into, get started. So this would be a great thing if it can be done. However, there's the matter of vested rights, which is the first thing that has to be sorted out. And I got to say, I hadn't actually contemplated this one before. It's just new to me. So the best I can say is that, okay, if you've sunk in like $1 million or more into a project and gone away for 15 years, you can count $1 million. It's still there. There's all these pipes in the ground. So we want to establish vested rights to the approval process and get our approvals quickly. Okay, that sounds reasonable. It could be grandfathered, but there's always those buts.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always the buts. And that this one would be, yeah, but it was for a senior housing complex. And that is, and I'm just going to invent something here. That's line 297B in the zoning. Okay. Now you want to go to line 296. That's different. So you may have to start your whole approval process over and come in that way. Oh, dear, because that's expensive. So they're trying to avoid that. And so now it's just with the planning board and maybe with the Zoning Board of Appeals. Can they rejig this so they can grandfather this project back into life? And I think everybody would applaud that except for the trees that have grown up on that site. But hey, trees, there's lots of trees. There's an issue and it's going to come up and we'll be coming back to this. I hope and pray they can get this through because I know that there's a desperate demand for housing. There's just not enough. Employers, everywhere I go and talk to employers, they say the same thing. We can't get staff. Restaurants may have to stay closed for another day in the week because they don't have anybody to come in. It gets that bad. We'll have to see. But that was potentially a bright spark of hope there that this could get built and there would be some apartments that would be maybe fairly quickly in, maybe by this time next year, which would be very helpful.
And very needed, like you said, just the need of housing is just so great and everywhere that in New York State, but here, especially in our area, just because folks are coming up, living here now, the young, the big talk we always talk about is the young people leaving the area to go somewhere else. And one of the reasons is you can't afford to live here now all of a sudden.
You're coming out of college, right? Okay, look, and let's look at it from the point of view us being taxpayers. We've all just paid our school bills, school tax bills, right? I just paid mine. We've all paid those. We're paying to educate our young people, right? When they come out of school, now some of them, we know they're going to go elsewhere, right? They're going to be financial consultants or whatever. They're going to go to Wall Street. They're going to live in the city. But if they're going, they want to have a job and they want to stay here and they want to stay in touch with their family and they want to, and they grew up here and they love this region, they love this area, how can they stay here? To pull together the money that's needed for a $400,000, $500,000 house, that's very tricky on starter salaries. It's not easy to get that mortgage. You're going to have to put down 40, 50 grand and so on. So you need an apartment and you need it at a reasonable rent so that you can get jobs and save some money and get towards that down payment. So then you can go out and look for a house. And even then, it's going to be tough because there's so few houses on the market. At least you'll have a shot. Right now, you don't have a shot. What do? You look around and you look down and you say, well, okay, we'll go to the city. We'll go. Brooklyn's exciting. We can get an apartment in Brooklyn. It's expensive, but we'll go live there and become city people. Oh, great. Yeah, we will lose you. But that, there is that possibility. And then maybe they'll come back in their 30s when they got kids and they're desperately tired of living in 400 square feet. But we'll see. And these are the issues we all have to grapple with, and we can avoid it, but it comes back to bias when you go down, you find that your favorite restaurant's not open because they couldn't.
Yeah.
They couldn't open, they didn't have staff. These are the sort of things we've got to deal with. And now the Worcester Planning Board, they've got to think about this and whether they push this to the Zoning Board. And I'm sure they're all poring over the various elements in the town code. What chapter was it? I think it's 112, but I'm not quite sure which exact section it is. If you want to go online and check it out, but they're going to be going through that with a fine tooth comb to see if there's some way they can give these vested rights and let this project go forward, because it would obviously be a huge boost to the local economy. But that's the thing, because again, code is always written for a reason. And of course, the other kicker with all that is if it's not in the zoning code, in that case, you can't do it. It's got to be in the code and allowed. It's got to be an allowed use to get an approval. And that's one of the things that when people are writing code, they have to think about. And it's one of the reasons why it takes so long, why it's so difficult, and why it can be very tricky.
It certainly can be tricky. Well, Chris, thank you so much for those two stories there. We talked about two major issues that we're facing, the Sullivan Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania and also County, which is aging infrastructure and housing. So, Chris, again, we'll talk to you again next week. We'll talk to Chris Rowley from the Shawanpunk Journal. Let us know what's happening in Ellenwood and Olmsted County. Coming up, learn all about the Narrowsburg Bee Festival that's happening this weekend. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Something close to 70% of voters said she performed well in this debate. That means a big chunk of people who said she did well are not voting for her. But that's also part of the story, which is that she might have done better in the debate, but it didn't actually change how people said they were planning to vote in the head-to-head matchup with Donald Trump.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on The Daily from The New York Times.
I'm Aaron Bendich. Join me for Borscht Beat, the Jewish music show on Radio Catskill. Each week I share rare, forgotten, and classic recordings from Jewish musical traditions across multiple generations. From Yiddish folk songs to instrumental klezmer, Yiddish theater, and contemporary performances. It's a grand tour of many musical landscapes. That's Borscht Beat, an hour of Jewish music in the Catskills, Sunday afternoons at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to The Local Edition on a Friday. I'm your host, Patricio Roballo. Narrowsburg Beloved Bee Fest returns this year for its 10th annual celebration, offering an opportunity to raise awareness about the declining honeybee population. Set against the historic backdrop of the Fort Delaware, this festival brings together bee enthusiasts, environmentalists, and curious visitors alike to engage in demonstrations, educational sessions, and hands-on activities, all aimed at promoting the protection of these vital pollinators. On the phone with us now is one of the organizers, is Joan Santos. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So this is the 10th annual. Normally, this is held in Narrowsburg. From my memory, when I attended in the past, it's always been held in Narrowsburg in Main Street. This is the first year it's going to be in Fort Delaware. Before we get into those details there, let's just talk about the creation of the Bee Festival and how has it evolved over these past 10 years?
We started it 10 years ago. It's a small festival that has grown through the years. We've had several different vendors and different organizers involved in it. And it's after the 10 years, it's come down to myself and my daughter Julia is helping me with it. It's just a great day for the family. Lots of different vendors there. We have some honey, we have food, we have different tastings. It's going to be a fun day.
Okay, great. So let's talk about sort of the evolution of the Bee Festival. Normally it's held in Narrowsburg Main Street, and it is now going to be in Fort Delaware, right?
Yeah, so we started out on Main Street, and it was a great event. We even had parades, and we've had the marching band from Wall and Pawpack come. We even tried to do Guinness Book of World Records of the most people dressed as bees. We were a little bit shy, but it was a great day. Everyone came and was really enthusiastic about it. It's just a day to come together with the community and to bring awareness of the importance of the bee. The bee population has been improving through the years with the people starting to be more diligent of not using pesticides on their lawns. And keeping those dandelions in the springtime, instead of cutting them down, the young, fresh bees coming out in the spring really enjoy those. So it's important just to bring awareness to it. And through the years, it's really taken off. And it's just a really fun day for the community.
That's great. So you feel like events like you're having this weekend on Saturday, the Bee Festival, bringing the awareness of what's happening with the honeybees and bee population has made an impact, it seems, right?
I would like to think so. There are a lot of children that have mentioned things about, I've heard them mention things about flowers and pollinator plants and being a little bit more diligent of not smashing that honeybee when they see it and having a little connection with it, which brings a conversation to the family, to the neighbors, to the people that visit the event. So it's, I think it did make an impact. And it's not just me, but the whole world is starting to realize the importance of bees and the pollinators.
Yeah, I could tell you that my daughter, who's in kindergarten, I know when she was in pre-K, they talked about bees and how pollinating bees and how important the bees are already. They're starting young, letting the kids know that, especially we live here in the Sullivan Catskills in the Northeast Pennsylvania area, bees are all around us. And I could say, personally, I've noticed more bees this spring and summer than previous years.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the different types of honey that we have, the spring honey, the fall honey, and what affects the taste of the honey, the different types of plants that are out. And we have people at the event this weekend that are going to be showing you things like that, different tastings and different things to do with the honey. It's going to be a great day.
That's great. So they said that the event is happening on Saturday. Right, the Honeybee Festival starts on Saturday.
It starts at 11 o'clock. It's going to be on Saturday. So outside the fort from 11 to 5, we'll have vendors and food and some tastings. And then after 5, at 5 to 10, they're having a butterfly ball, and that's happening between 5 and 10. They have a DJ. It's going to be like a party vibe. People will be dressed as pollinators, butterflies, that sort of thing. And that's happening between 5 and 10. But one of the main features that we have, which has really been a big hit through the years, and we are so grateful to the Wall and Pawpack Marching Band in Pennsylvania. The kids come in every year, and they dress as bees, and they perform, and they are amazing. And that's going to be happening at 4 o'clock in front of the fort.
Oh, that's great. That's great. When I attended one year in Narrowsburg, they had a sort of a parade encouraging folks to dress up in bee outfits or bees, whatever, something that supports the bees. Is that still happening This Saturday? Anything
no,
like that?
Okay. No parade, unfortunately. Our small town is, there's a lot of people, and it's getting to be very crowded, so we decided just to have it at the fort this year. But the band will be there, and everyone will be walking around in costumes, and it's really fun. And we also have things for sale that you could wear, and the proceeds go back to the festival.
We talked a little bit about the raising awareness about the decline of honeybees. We can see that not only the Bee Festival raising awareness, but across the country, folks are raising awareness of how the importance of these pollinators are. What impact do you hope this festival has on the local community?
I'll tell you, I have seen a lot of people planting different pollinator plants. I have seen people trying to keep their lawns growing in spring and getting those little dandelions growing and early spring flowers, keeping them out as opposed to mowing them, which encourages the bees to pollinate. Because it's after that winter and it's cold, there's really not much going on in the flower department. And then they come out and here they have all these beautiful yellow and bright spring flowers. And now people are keeping their lawns a little bit more natural, I should say, or organic, as opposed to keeping them mowed and manicured. Some people are starting to see the difference in the bees by doing that. So maybe that helped. I just hope little things that we can do that might help.
Yeah.
And of course, you don't want to use pesticides with that Roundup and other similar products like that with the chemicals are really not good for our water sources, of course, and our planet.
Yeah. So the Narrowsburg Honeybee Festival starts at 11, goes all the way to 5 this Saturday, September 21st. This year is happening at Fort Delaware. Still happening in Narrowsburg, just happening in Fort Delaware, not too far away from Main Street in Narrowsburg. Joan, anything else that you want to add to this before we go? Anything about the festival or anything else coming up as far as comes to honeybees or anything you have going on?
Oh, we do have another festival in October. It's called Logging Days. That happens on October 5th. And that's a day where we have the lumberjack competition. They come and down at the Fireman's Field down Demora Lane by Landers Campground. And that's a fun day as well in Narrowsburg. But this Narrowsburg has a lot going on. We have a lot of eateries now, a lot of restaurants, different shops that are popping up and opening daily. Yeah, come on down to Narrowsburg, but definitely come and check out the Honeybee Festival this weekend. It's going to be a beautiful day, and you're going to enjoy the festivities.
Yeah, the outlook for the weather looks great. Enjoy the last days of summer. Yeah, at the Honeybee Festival.
Yeah.
Awesome. Joan, thank you so much for joining me on the program, talking about the Honeybee Festival that's happening this Saturday at Fort Delaware in Narrowsburg. Kicks off at 11 a.m. and goes all the way to 5. And also there's the after party. So thank you so much thank you so much for joining me on the program. I do really appreciate it. And good luck this weekend.
Thank you.
And that does it for the local edition. We'll be back on Monday. We'll be talking to Sullivan County Government and checking in with New York Focus. If you ever miss a show, guess what? We have a podcast. You can find us anywhere you find your favorite podcast. Search for WJFF, The Local Edition. Subscribe, share it, and tell your friends. Find us on social media. We're at WJFF Radio Catskill. Visit our website, WJFFradio.org, for more interviews. And also, while you're there, sign up for our newsletter. You've been listening to The Local Edition. I'm your host, Patricio Roballo. Have a good night, Lucy. Everyone else, enjoy your weekend. Stay safe. Take care.
Support comes from Gems Green Printing and Embroidery in Milford, Pennsylvania. Family-owned business offering decorated apparel, promotional items, signs, banners, and more since 2016. More information at gemspe.com.
I'm Jason Tuga, host of The Mixtape. Every Friday night, it's my goal to bring WJFF listeners great music. Music from all over the world. Stuff that's been lost in the archives and needs to be heard. classics you already knew you loved, and new stuff from established and emerging artists. All right here on the mixtape, WJFF Radio Catskill.
Friday night at 7 on Radio Catskill. W.